As I was saying a few minutes ago, this is the same talk that I gave at the World Service Convention. So those of you who have heard this already can leave without prejudice. Michael will be speaking for a few minutes after me, but we will have time after that for sharing. So those of you who have really good shtick can come up and share. Normally, my most problematic character defect is that I procrastinate. But I did not procrastinate when it came to signing up for the World Service Convention. And the speaker-getter for the convention did not procrastinate either. She called me 4 months before the convention. She had found leaders for most all of the workshops, but she was particularly looking for someone who would agree to lead the workshop on humor, someone who thought that she was funny. And here's the really good news. The workshop was recorded, so it will live forever on CD, and it's currently available for sale on OA.org. I could have procrastinated, and so when the 12 and 12 tells us that we keep our defects because we have benefited from them in the past, we all know that this is true. I'm going to do some surveys during this talk. First of all, by show of hands, how many of you have been made totally, completely miserable by compulsive overeating or other compulsive food behaviors? Mm-hmm. Everybody, okay, good. How many of you know someone who has died from this disease? Yeah, a lot of you. So we have a disease that makes us miserable, often for years and years and years, and then kills a lot of us. I could have signed up for an easy workshop like Humor and the Bubonic Plague. But seriously, I'm a huge fan of humor. When facing something miserable, humor is indicated. Humor is a tool. But people know this is such a serious disease. Why would you apply humor to a disease that makes you miserable and then kills you? And I would say that you apply humor because it helps you defeat the disease. It helps you regain a life of sane and happy usefulness. Many years ago, I met several human rights activists who had been unjustly imprisoned, often under brutal conditions all around the world. And we can relate to imprisonment, right? We're imprisoned by our disease. I observed that these courageous men and women had three things in common that helped them get through the most miserable situations and come out sane. One, they had a close personal relationship with a higher power of their understanding, like we get from steps 2, 3, and 11. Two, they had a compelling desire to tell their stories so that others could learn from their experiences, which is a major part of step 12 as described in the Big Book. And finally, each and every one of them, every single one of them, had a wicked sense of humor. They could all laugh at themselves, they could laugh at their oppressors, and they could laugh at the human condition. Humor helped them survive something truly miserable until they could regain a life of sane and happy usefulness. One of my favorite movies addresses three very serious topics, which are racism, government corruption, and terrorism. And this movie is hysterically funny. In this movie, racism, government corruption, terrorism, they're all defeated. This was the first movie that made me feel good after 9/11. It gave me the courage to go forward when the present and the future seemed really pretty miserable. If you can laugh, you have not been defeated. You can have the optimism about the future. You can boldly go where... Okay, that was the wrong movie. All right, so I think humor is indicated. From a medical standpoint, humor, something is indicated if it benefits you therapeutically. Doctors ask their patients to be compliant with what they think is beneficial and indicated. For example, when I was 16, a doctor told me that I was overweight and should lose weight. Like I had missed that. We meet compulsive overeaters all the time. And we heard a great example before lunch, who think if they make themselves miserable enough, they will go on a diet and lose weight. Sound familiar? Yeah? Okay. They may, for example, squeeze into clothes that are so small they cause embarrassment and physical pain. They brutally criticize themselves, breaking out the whips and the chains because they have a food addiction and they eat like a food addict. They think misery is a tool, right? They think misery is going to help them lose weight. So, let's do a scientific experiment. Let's see how well this tool works. Another show of hands. Before you were abstinent, how many of you used to feel less desire to eat when you were miserable? Nobody. Okay. Before you were abstinent, how many of you used to feel more desire to eat when you were miserable? Yeah. Okay. How many of you have felt more desire to eat when you were laughing? Laughing. Okay. All right. The defense rests. Okay. Your higher power does not want you to be miserable. If you think your higher power does want you to be miserable, I can only tell you it is time to fire his ass. Okay? Get yourself a higher power who wants you to recover. After all, we only eat because of three issues. And surmount it, three issues. We eat because of, please stop me if you can't hear me. We eat because of three issues. These are difficult issues. Surmounting them requires the help of a higher power. And these issues are, of course, the past, the present, the future. Now you know that this is true, okay? All right, you only think you eat because of your boss or your in-laws, all right? I have sponsees and a sponsor. Here's how I deal with these issues with my sponsees. The first problem, the past sucks. I sucked in the past. Not Michael, of course, he did not suck in the past. My family sucked in the past. I feel miserable about the past, so I'm going to eat. For issues of the past, I really, really like the Serenity Prayer. I tell people, work the steps, repeat the resentment prayer. And if my sponsee still can't leave the past alone, I share a huge whopping mistake from my past. I have a modest list. For example, way back in 1985, I and most other Americans who were more than 25 then had the opportunity to invest in a high-tech company that requires no promotion from me or anyone else in this room. And had I done it, I would be a multimillionaire today. But I did not do it. Even 2 years ago, when the Dow was at 6,600, I did not invest. That was another expensive mistake. On the other hand, I did not invest my life savings with Bernie Madoff. I did not suck that much, okay? So perspective is really important. The second problem. The present sucks, and I suck. Only food makes me feel less miserable about myself and my miserable life, so I'm eating. If you, my sponsor, try and stop me, I'm going to impale you with my fork and keep on eating. A present that sucks is actually the hardest of the three problems. Nevertheless, an attitude of gratitude, prayer, meditation, deep breathing, and a plan of action to change the present will all help. If that is not enough, I again have something I tell my sponsee. Let's take a look at what your present could be. All right? You could be working in Arkansas at a chicken processing plant. Yeah, earning minimum wage, where the fire door is locked to keep you from stealing chicken parts. They know us well. Wait. Considering many alternatives, you could be lucky. You could be working in a maquiladora in Mexico, earning $12 a day, steaming in a hot tin shack at night. But wait, it could be worse. You could be living out in the open, homeless, hungry, in sub-Saharan Africa. Even then, you could feel lucky. You could be married to Kevin Federline. Okay? Yeah. Third problem. Yeah, so, you know, be grateful for what you've got. Third problem, I can see that my future is going to suck and I'm miserable about it, so I'm going to eat. The laws of nature and physics have not been repealed. The future is actually uncertain. I have a lovely comic strip showing two children walking up a snowy hill with a sled. And one child is pointing out to the other, watch out for that tree. and the other child is saying, look out for that rock. And the children get up to the top of the hill and get in the sled, and they end up sliding down the hill backwards. And the first child gets to the bottom and says, you know, I always worry about the wrong thing. And me too. Michael, no. Okay. My mother used to say that if worry were an Olympic event, then her mother-in-law, my grandmother, would have been an Olympic medalist. All right, but it doesn't help. You can get through the future with the help of all the people in the rooms, with the help of your higher power, and the future is uncertain anyway. So whether the problem is in the past or the present or the future, you will observe that focusing on misery makes you more miserable, while focusing on gratitude and using humor makes you happier. To summarize, misery is the problem. Humor is the antidote. Humor is a tool. Humor is indicated. You will recall that a person who can laugh at herself will never lack for a source of humor. So here's my story, which is just like everybody else's, just different. I am a compulsive overeater and relapse survivor, maintaining a 60-pound weight loss and back-to-back abstinence for 5 years. What brought me to OA for the first time was a photograph of me with my sister at her wedding. I was her maid of honor, and I had a year to grow out my hair, find a fabulous dress and a good color, grow out my nails, otherwise look fabulous at her wedding. I did not procrastinate. A week before the wedding, all I had to do was lose 40 pounds. At age 2, my mother took me off whole milk because given the choice between eating a food that was 40% of its calories from fat and any other food, I was going to drink the milk. Over time, I expanded my food preferences. Learning to eat from the 4 major food groups, you may know these, sugar, flour, chocolate, milk, fat. The best foods had all 4 of the major food groups. By age 12, I was 5 inches taller than most of my friends, and I was appalled at the fact that I actually weighed 30 pounds more than they did. So I started to restrict. Especially, I would skip breakfast and lunch and eat the 4 major food groups at the convenience store after school. I'm not the only one here who does that. Okay, all right. Little did I know that research shows that if rats alternately binge on sugar and restrict, they will develop sugar addiction. And the reason why I did not know this was that the research had not been done yet. But you can go to the U.S. government's website of published medical research worldwide. It's pubmed.gov. And you can look up sugar addiction. And you will find more than 400 medical journal articles about sugar addiction. So your experience is not unknown to the medical community. However, you may have friends and relatives who don't believe in sugar addiction, who tell you, of course, you can have just one. I made it. Okay. So here's what you can say in response, which is a direct quote from a peer-reviewed medical journal. Quote, both human and animal studies have demonstrated that in some brains, the consumption of sugar-rich foods or drinks primes the release of euphoric endorphins and dopamine in a manner similar to some drugs of abuse. The neurobiological pathways of drug and sugar addiction involve similar neural receptors, neurotransmitters, and hedonic regions of the brain. Craving, tolerance, withdrawal, and sensitization have been documented in both human and animal studies, end quote. And that's why I can't eat just one sweet thing. Now, you would, of course, only respond like that to your friends and relatives if you were a major smartass like me. And then if you have an alcoholic parent, and how many of us know people in program who do, the biological, this is again a direct quote, the biological children of alcoholic parents, particularly alcoholic fathers, are at greater risk to have a strong sweet preference, and this may manifest in some with an eating disorder. Specific genes may underline the sweet preference in alcohol and drug-dependent individuals, as well as in biological children of paternal alcoholics. This research is not news to you. You see this in meetings every day. I have a friend who says that while she is being abstinent, her disease is doing push-ups. That's what the rat studies say, too. If she were to go back to eating sugar, she would binge worse than ever. I don't stay abstinent today because of studies done on rats. I learned my lesson from my own body. I learned that when I eat sugar, or indeed any of the four major food groups, and I stop eating it, I'm going to go through withdrawal. Nasty withdrawal will last for a few days, then minor withdrawal for a month, and then cravings for months after that. There is no food, no food, no food that tastes good enough for a minute or 10 minutes that will justify withdrawal for a month and cravings for much longer. Now that I have been abstinent for 5 years, I no longer have any interest in the four major food groups. And as the big book says, I recoil from them as from a hot flame. I can turn away from them in the same way that I would turn away from eating peanuts if I had a deadly peanut allergy. I relapsed for 7 years when I thought I had graduated from this program. I learned from relapse that I have a disease that requires management, and it requires my being an active member of this fellowship. I use the tools, including humor, which is the 10th tool. I work the steps which have been proven to be effective in defeating addictions to other substances that act on the body's opiate receptors. And I hope that's something you have learned from this presentation today, that we have an addiction to a substance that is acting on our opiate receptors. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I now attend 3 meetings a week. I go to 2 retreats or conventions each year. They give me perspective, gratitude, a chance to be honest, so I don't need to fear the past, the present, or the future, or even that Michael will be funnier than me. That's why I did not procrastinate a chance to speak at the World Service Convention or to speak here. I'm going to be attending this year's Region 7 Convention in Ocean City, Maryland, November 4th through 6th. I encourage you guys to put the date on your calendar now. And the next World Service Convention will be August 1 through 4, 2013 in Cleveland. Thanks for letting me share.
I've just been tired of sitting, so I hope it's okay that I stand. I like this too. My name is Michael, and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Michael.
Welcome.
Hi, Michael.
Okay, that's better. And I just want to share one thing, that service is very important to me. So when I had a voicemail message that the other speaker was unable to get here, I volunteered. So.
And what time is that?
That was 9:10, I think, this morning, around that. So have I had an opportunity to prepare? No. Have I been in anguish all day about, you know, what am I going to say? Yeah. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you Michael's life before OA, either on the Cliff Notes version or methamphetamine, whichever, you know, your choice is. Unlike our keynote speaker this morning, I did not come into the world 5 pounds, like, or 4 pounds, or whatever it was. I came in 8, whatever it was, and I was large. And I continued to gain weight. You know, I still blame it on the fact that I had my tonsils taken out when I was 5 years old. I think the surgeon did something. Trying to track down that surgeon and find out what he did. But I continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I lived through a period of time when there was a Cuban Missile Crisis. If you're too young to remember that, leave the room now before any bodily harm, okay? And I can remember one, Halloween was one of my favorite holidays. I can remember one Halloween actually saying, because of this crisis, I'm going to keep this candy just in case we get bombed. And as you know, it only lasted till the next day. I came into the program 11 years ago, my current abstinence is from June of this year, I've lost about 72 pounds in program. I came into program not sure what I was going to, you know, I'm not understanding. You know, I was dating somebody at the time. They suggested that I go to OA, and all I remembered was my sister saying how depressing OA was. So I was like, well, I don't really want to go to someplace that's going to be depressing. I mean, I'd already tried everything under the sun to try and lose weight. I had gone to the very popular diet club at that point, that was a Freudian slip, you know, where they had points and all that kind of stuff. I tried the prepackaged food, you know, where you're given a week's worth of food and you eat it that night. So I tried diet pills and liked them, but unfortunately the FDA didn't feel it was good to have them in such, you know, they really weren't. You lost weight, you had lots of energy, and you had a clean bathroom. So, you know, I tried everything before I got into these rooms. In fact, when I was going to that diet place, you know, I was a lecturer because I had lost 120 pounds. I had lost 100 pounds a number of times. And I lost 120 pounds, and at that time, they were giving me these cufflinks. Now, really, how many men wear cufflinks these days? But this was like about 20 years ago. And I thought they were real diamonds. They were, you know. And I remember, so I was lecturing for this organization, and I started, I was a food addict, but I didn't know that. I didn't even know there was such a thing as food addiction. And I went on something that they called maintenance. And maintenance was saying that now you could have the forbidden foods. And I was like, this is wonderful. Now I can have that cake and eat it too. But it was like 1/8 of a piece. Well, there were, I don't know if there were children starving in Europe, but I was starving in Philadelphia with the 1/8 of a piece. What happens to the other 7/8, you know? So I didn't even realize it. So I started eating more of those maintenance foods. And you can imagine what happened. I started to gain weight. And then they had special workshops. They were for the lecturers in trouble. You could always identify them because they always wore the long sweaters and dark colors. And I went to these special workshops, and it didn't really help. And then it was like, I could never go back there because I was, you know, a lecturer and had gained weight. So I came into these rooms 11 years ago. And I will share with you, and this is how humor has helped me. I walked into the room, and of course I couldn't go by myself. And I walked into the Friday, and I lived in Philadelphia, but a friend of mine was going to join me and another friend. So of course codependent Michael was like, okay, I'm good. And I went to the Friday night meeting in Cherry Hill. I didn't know what was going on in that meeting. They were saying how. I thought it was a bunch of Indians. I had no idea. And it was like there were probably about 60, 70 people in the room, and they would have a line here. I always called it the conga line, because it would be like, I'm clumsy too. There would be like all these people who were abstinent. I didn't even know what abstinent was. I didn't even know how to say the serenity prayer. I kind of did a little, you know, like my version of the serenity. I didn't even know what the serenity prayer was. So there was this whole line of people, and they were all like, they had thousands of pounds, and they've lost the weight and kept it off for more than an hour. That was pretty amazing to me, because that's about the extent of my weight loss. And then they said that they didn't eat flour, they didn't eat sugar, and they didn't eat volume. And I was like, well, what the hell is left? And I just started doing it, and they said, you need to get a sponsor. And I will tell you, I was not a model OA-er, because honestly, I figured that a sponsor should approach me. They would want me, and nobody did. So finally, I did, you know, ask somebody to be my sponsor. This program has, people said to me, oh, you're very humorous, you're funny, etc. I was not before coming into these rooms. I was terribly depressed. All I could think about was, I just don't want to wake up today. Or if I wake up today, I want to wake up and the 100 pounds of fat will be on this side. I can flush it down the toilet, call Roto-Rooter, and everything will be wonderful. So higher powers. I really did not want to continue living. Now, that's where I was 11 years ago. And where I am today is much different. I really can find humor in everything. For example, last September I had a relationship of 18 months that ended. I was very, sad and hurt and, although there were signs that this was not, the most perfect relationship in the world, but I wanted to ignore them. But again, I kept thinking about this individual and thinking about this individual. And somebody said to me, you just need to start saying the resentment prayer. Okay, I resent it. Okay. They said, you need to pray. And they didn't give me a formal prayer, which I like because I have no memory. You need to pray for the things that you have that you want him to have. So I thought, acne was not so bad, right? And at first I thought, I kind of teetered with that, maybe I'll pray for something. But what I did was I started praying, for all the things that God has been so good and blessed me with. And the resentment was lifted. And I wasn't sad or depressed. I was pretty happy. Because that was good. So that's really where I've been. I can laugh at myself instead of getting depressed. I don't sit in a room like all the time, And there are times I sit in a room, but I don't sit in the room and think about, oh, I've had such a rough life. I have had such a charmed life thanks to OA. 6 years ago, I had been with the company for 27 years. And they were laying off 3,000 people. So rude. They were laying off 3,000 people. Guess who was one of those people? And all I did was I prayed that I would not become angry and bitter like everyone else. And people, it's kind of like, you ever have somebody die in your family? And people will see you and it's like you have the bubonic plague. They don't know what to say to you, so they kind of just walk by. And this is what happened, I'm walking in the hallway. And this is how humor has helped me. I'm walking in the hallway and somebody that I was friendly with was like, didn't want to look at me, And I went up to her and I said, listen, I got pink slip, not pink eye. It's not contagious. This is what OA has given me. It's given me a feeling that, you know what? Everything can happen as long as I'm one and whole with God. And I can look at things with a very, very positive outlook. And oh, by the way, I did lose my job of 27 years. And 1 month later to the day, that company called me and told me about another position. That's really higher power. And that's also, I think, because I kept my humor about me, during those tough times. Because I saw people who were so angry. How could they do this? I have been so dedicated. Well, you're right. You have been. And I'm sorry that it happened to you. It happened to me, too. And now, of course, some of the people who were let go and then I got a job, they've got some more bitterness that they got to deal with. But I'm their issue, not mine. So anyway, humor has been like a tool that's helped me get through rough times and not so rough times. And again, the other thing that I will share with you before I open it up to your sharing is that I am on a very powerful antidepressant, which really helps, okay? And you don't need a prescription for it. You don't have to meet somebody on a dark street in a bad neighborhood to get it. And it's an easy name to remember. It's called gratitude. If I stop and think of all of the things that I need to be grateful for, any sense of depression is gone. And one of the things I'm grateful for is that I can laugh at myself, I can laugh at my disease, And I can realize that thanks to OA, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. Thank you.
So now...